Nick DiGilio here. Yeah, we are live in the Allstate Studios on Michigan Avenue here in the Showcase Studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have a movie question or a comment. Eric Childress will not be joining us tonight. He is in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Film Festival right now watching a movie. So while we're reviewing the movies, he's going to be watching them in Austin. And but Colin is with us, Colin Suter, who joins us every week to review the movies on Saturday night. And we'll cover all the movies, and we've got some other stuff to talk about as well. So let's actually, we got to make it official here by doing this. That's right. It is that time of the week. It's time for the movie reviews and movie discussion stuff. So we welcome Colin to the show. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay, man. I'm all right. So Eric is in Austin.
Enjoying the warmth.
Yeah. And I saw that he put up he puts up little tweets and comments on his Facebook page. And,
mm-hmm.
and evidently he thought Neighbors was funny.
Well, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, it does star Seth Rogen. And, you know, Eric, I think, has a weak spot for Seth Rogen, and he'll admit to that.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me. But the trailer still looks horrendous to me.
Yeah, I mean, I just couldn't believe how bad it looked, the trailer.
Yeah.
But speaking of trailers that made me almost vomit,
I think I know where you're going.
Have you seen the trailer for Annie?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're in for some pain this year. You know, there's a lot to look forward to, but oh, there's a lot to dread. This is one of them.
Is that what you thought I was going to say?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I saw your post on Facebook earlier this week, and I got curious and had to check it out, and was like, yeah, oh, God.
I seriously couldn't. I was like, what is the – and I mean, at first I was like, okay, this is like an Onion parody, right? This can't be real. I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, from the director of Easy A, which I enjoyed.
I know.
You know, and what Friends with Benefits, which I also enjoyed.
Right. What's going on,
but man?
This is
you know, Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz is supposed to be like, you know, Miss Hannigan. You know, Annie was one of those things when I was a kid. It was a big deal.
Yeah,
I that was the first like musical thing that I think I was ever exposed to, and I, you know, my parents took me to see it at the Schubert Theater, and you know, so it that's a part of my childhood.
Sure.
But that's okay. I mean, go ahead and make a new one if you want. That's fine. Because kids do like the music in it, but you know, the Miss Hannigan character is supposed to be this like frail, like old bat, you know. But
yeah.
They don't get Cameron Diaz to play that part. That's a minor thing. But on the other hand, you got Kevonjane Wallace as Annie, which is interesting. The kid from Beasts of the Southern Wild
is
the girl in this thing.
Right.
That's a little. Small silver lining there, but still, yeah, this is going to be bad.
Man, oh man. Man, oh man. I seriously, just like, what is this? Anyway, all right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Oscars since we got a little extra time tonight.
Sure.
How'd you feel about, I mean, just pretty predictable, don't you think?
Very predictable. This is, I think, the best year that I've had as far as predicting. You know, when I go on the eFilm Critic and I do the Oscar, you know, thing that, you know, so I can win 50 DVDs or whatever it was. And I usually do pretty poorly. I think this is the best year that I've had. I think I only got like 5 or 6 wrong, which is pretty remarkable for me because I suck at this.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm the same way, Colin.
Yeah.
I did great this year, though. I did great.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, not a lot of surprises. I think for me, the biggest surprise as far as the winners go was her winning best screenplay. I thought American Hustle was going to get it. It seemed like the kind of movie that gets it, and Her seems like the kind of, you know, sort of weird movie that doesn't go home with anything, but everybody still talks about years from now. So that's a good surprise. You know, I'm very happy that it won. I think that was the only surprise for me.
Yeah, I was surprised by that one too. I thought it was going to go to Blue Jasmine because they love Woody Allen. But it did. I was happy that Spike Jonze won. It was my second favorite film of the year. So
I think with Blue Jasmine, I mean, Woody Allen's got a lot of, you know, bad press on him now, understandably.
Yeah.
I would have been very surprised if that had won.
Now I got to tell you, I was surprised at what won documentary feature.
Oh yes, you know what? You're right. That is a surprise.
20 Feet from Stardom. I was stunned that it won. Not that I didn't like the movie, because the movie's terrific, but I was really stunned.
Yeah, I sort of had a feeling as they were announcing the movies, I was just like, suddenly it occurred to me, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Everybody's seen 20 Feet from Stardom. It's a big crowd pleaser. You know, Act of Killing is a lot for some people to digest. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the Academy viewers turned off the screener halfway through watching it, you know?
Yeah.
And it just sort of like suddenly went, oh no, I'm going to get this one wrong. And I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it wrong. I got it wrong. I voted for Act of Killing and I got that one wrong too. So
yeah, I guess the Academy has a weakness for, you know, music-based documentaries about people who, you know, used to be famous or were sort of famous on the fringe and are coming back now. Because Searching for Sugar Man won last year, right?
Yeah, not last year. I think it was a year before.
Year before. So yeah, I guess they got a weakness for that kind of thing, which is fine.
Now, what did you think of the show itself?
It seems to get harder and harder to sit through these things every year, or I don't know, as I get older. I thought Ellen DeGeneres did okay. I was at a party, so I couldn't really hear everything. You know, I couldn't hear all the jokes that were going on. It seemed, you know, like a pretty tame affair. I don't need two, you know, montage sequences of heroes. You know.
Right.
And some of the things they picked for that montage were pretty laughable, they could speed it up. I mean, I wish they would go by the Golden Globes playbook, you know, which is a joke, but they know how to put on a show and they know how to do it tight and they know how to do it in 3 hours. I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
Yeah.
And I wish the Academy would do the same thing.
Yeah. I thought it was bloated, you know, as usual. I thought Ellen had a couple of funny bits. I guess the pizza thing was kind of funny, and you know.
Yeah, all I kept thinking was that, you know, U2 did this 20 years ago at one of their concerts.
Yeah.
that's what I kept thinking during it. But
I bet they were thinking that too. They were probably sitting there going,
"Yeah, hey, I was like, yeah, we've been there, done that." Yeah. Okay.
I also love the fact that in that selfie, Lupita Nyong'o's brother just like squeezes his way into the front.
Sure.
I thought that was pretty hilarious. It's like, you look at star, who the hell is that guy?
Exactly. It's like photo bomb right there.
Yeah.
what I love about that photo is just Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. She just puts a smile on my face. When I look at that photo, my eyes just go immediately to her, like, oh, yeah.
She's great, man. You know?
She's just awesome.
She's great.
In every way.
I just think she's spectacular, you know? And I'm glad that she's, you know, having the kind of success that she's having. She deserves it. And she's absolutely hilarious, man. I mean, you know, her on talk shows, man, it's just great, especially when she's on Letterman. Just unbelievably funny on Letterman, man. I mean, you know, because Letterman's got a huge crush on her, obviously. I think everybody does.
Sure.
Really, it's great stuff. As far as speeches go, McConaughey's speech was very McConaughey.
Very much so. big cheers at the party when that happened and when he gave his speech. I thought Leto was good, too. I thought he did a really good speech.
A great speech. Jared Leto's speech was awesome.
Yeah, and Lupita Nyong'o, her speech was great. I think the speeches are, you know, win for the night. I think there was a lot of just really, you know, genuine sentiment, genuine gratefulness, you know, for the award. There was nobody grandstanded it, I don't think. You know, that was probably the best part of the evening were the acceptance speeches. Very good.
I was not aware until, you know, it blew up on the internet the next morning that there was a rift between Steve McQueen and John Ridley.
No, I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that until, you know, but I remember when Ridley was up on stage accepting the Oscar for the screenplay for 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
And they cut back to Steve McQueen. He was clapping in a very weird way. And I was like,
yeah,
is that the way he claps? I was thinking to myself, is that the way he claps? And then, you know, when I read about it, it was like a mocking clap.
Yeah.
Like he was doing that on
very
purpose.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Ridley wasn't up on stage at the end when it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Ridley didn't mention Steve McQueen. You know, Steve McQueen didn't mention Ridley. It was just very odd.
Yeah. Yeah, those little soap operas that you discover later on, sometimes these things can be very interesting.
And like you, I was at a party and, you know, and having some cocktails and hanging out and stuff like that. So the whole John Travolta thing, I didn't even see.
Yeah, me neither, actually. I was counting other people's ballots. I was in charge of a trivia contest, an Oscar contest thing at the party. So I was counting ballots and, you know, counting who got what wrong and whatever during a lot of the speeches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I missed the Travolta thing, too. You got to give the guy a break, though. He's known to have a form of dyslexia.
Right.
You know, that's well documented. So I think maybe something like that creeped in. He didn't mention it, but, you know, I sort of give the guy a
well,
you know,
I didn't even, because I knew that he was going to introduce somebody to sing a song, so I zoned out. You know, during the songs, I know you didn't with you too. But like for most of the song performances, I was like, oh, it's time to get another piece of pizza and a drink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I didn't, you know, when he introduced her, I didn't, you know he screwed anything up. And then it wasn't until later that night when I was checking out the internet, I was like, oh my God, that's not even close.
No. I mean, you're right. It was not even close. And I think, you know, half of America now has Travoltified their name on the internet as a widget.
Yeah.
I know I did. I can't remember what I got, but.
Yep.
it's going to take a long time for him to live that down.
I know.
But I don't care. He struggled with that sort of with an affliction of that sort, you know, for many years, and so you know.
Yeah. And I know that we're both very, very happy that Alfonso Cuarón won for Gravity. And he gave a great speech too.
I mean, not quite as funny as his Golden Globe acceptance speech,
right.
Which when Sandra, I'm going to give you herpes, and she, you know, she really said, I'm going to give you an earpiece. I mean, that's just funny. a lot of people ask me, are you surprised that Gravity took home so many awards?
No.
Are you kidding me? I mean, it had that thing in the, you know, all those technical awards, it had it in the bag.
Of course they did. I mean,
geez.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised that Great Gatsby won production design.
I'm not that surprised by that. I mean, I never, when it comes to production design and costume design, never bet against the costume dramas.
Right.
You know, it always goes to something historical or something where people are wearing a lot of, you know, fancy corsets and fancy dresses.
Yeah, and that's all that Baz Luhrmann does anyway. Like, his movies have no... That's all he does. His movies have no depth or anything. They're all about costumes and shiny sets and stuff. All right. So yeah, not huge surprises across the board. I was just incredibly pleased that Matthew McConaughey won, capping off a great year. And tomorrow night, man, the finale for True Detective, man. Oh,
you know, I know, and of course, I'm way behind. I've never seen an episode. I'm gonna have to wait, or you know, for something that, you know, for it to come out on DVD, and you know. I know.
Yeah. Well, the theories, I love how it stirred up so many theories and people are talking. This is like the most talked about show since Lost started.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. In terms of theory and stuff
like that, and all these hints and clues and little things to look for. It's just so much fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a blast. All right, well, that's the Oscars. Listen, why don't we take a quick break, Colin? When we come back, why don't you tell us all about the Chicago Film Critics Association Film Fest, okay?
All righty.
All right, Colin Suter is with us. Eric is in Austin at the South by Southwest Film Festival. He's seeing movies right now, so he's not going to be able to review with us. We will cover all the new movies and on-demand stuff, as well as the theater movies. And then Colin, when we come back, going to tell you about a special film festival here, right here on WGN. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. We review the movies here on Saturday night after 10:30 every week when we have a full show. Colin Suter is here. Eric is in a movie theater right now at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. So tell everybody about the second annual Chicago Film Critics Film Festival.
Yeah, the Chicago Critics Film Festival this year, it's coming up. It's going to be May 9th. Through the 15th, so we're expanding. We're not just a weekend thing. Now we're a full week, and we're not at the Movie Co. this year. This year we're at the Music Box, so we're more centrally located downtown. And we just put out our a little preview of some of the films that we're going to be playing this week. This week we released a preview. We got an animated film from the guy who did Waltz with Bashir, a film called The Congress with Robin Wright, who plays a character named Robin Wright. And that's got a really interesting premise where she allows a digital likeness of herself to be created so that she can continue her career without worrying about the ravages of time. I'm anxious to see that one. We've got a Slam Dance Award winner called Copenhagen. We got the latest Michel Gondry movie coming out called Moon Indigo with Audrey Tautou from Amelie. We got an Australian movie called Mystery Road with Aaron Peterson and Hugo Weaving. This one I know you're going to want to see, Obvious Child. Which is the comedy with Jenny Slate
yeah.
who plays a comedian who gets pregnant. Really can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, I'm excited about that movie for sure. Yep.
Yeah. We got one called OXV, The Manual. That sounds kind of like a cool little sci-fi movie. And then we got Willow Creek, which is Bobcat Goldthwait's latest film, which is a horror movie that involves Bigfoot.
Yeah. When I interviewed Bobcat last year, he was telling me that he was making a Bigfoot movie, and I'm like, of course you are.
Of course. Sure. Why not? Yeah. So those are just a few of the titles that we're going to be playing. We're still programming this thing, and I'm in charge of the short film program. So I've watched, well over 100 shorts to try and narrow it down to, 15. not an easy thing to do.
I bet, man. Yeah.
So we're really excited, and passes and tickets are not on sale yet, but they will be soon. If you go and like us on Facebook or, keep checking the our website, ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, we'll have all the information up there, as it becomes available.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, right?
Yes. Okay. Once again, it's May 9th through the 15th at the Music Box Theater, and we're going to have all kinds of guests and surprises and, midnight screenings and, all kinds of great stuff. So when you get to be at the Music Box, it opens up so many more doors, and we're ecstatic. I mean, it's going to be so great this year.
That's great. All right, and we'll obviously cover it on this show as well. All right, that's cool, man. All right, Colin, hang on, okay?
All right.
All right, we got a break for news. Then Colin and I will review all the new movies and take your phone calls, too, at 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here, and the news is coming up next. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on the main floor here overlooking Michigan Avenue. The phone number is 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join us. We're talking movies. Eric Childress is not with us this evening. He is at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin watching movies. But Colin is here, and we will review the new movies. Hey, Colin.
Hello.
If I sound distracted during this segment, I was just looking up at the TV and the Bad News Bears just started. So.
Oh, one of my all-time favorite films.
Me too. Me too, man.
Every summer I watch that movie. It's just one of the best.
Yeah, I love that movie. Matthau is phenomenal in it.
Oh yeah, I mean, and the kids too. I mean, like, you know. I'm sort of in awe of that film because, I mean, and there's no, like, behind-the-scenes documentary or retrospective or anything on it, but I would love to know how Michael Ritchie just got those performances out of those kids. I mean, they're so perfectly cast and so natural.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all just playing these really distinct characters. I mean, you know, I people in my age group, my generation or whatever, revere the Goonies, and I don't. I'm one of the very few people who just does not. I'm just not a big fan of the Goonies at all. I mean, you know, I just say, you know, if you want to see a movie about, you know, really, really funny kids with really distinct personalities, Bad News Bears is the way to go.
And Bad News Bears is right in my wheelhouse because I was 12 when it came out, and you know, and I was just, I thought it was the greatest movie ever, and I had a massive crush on Tatum O'Neal. Because she can,
understandably, and of course, it shows like 12-year-old kids riding motorcycles. Like, I want to be that kid,
right? Exactly.
Like, why do I have to drive a Schwinn? That kid drives the motorbike, a motorcycle.
I gotta say though, as much as I was completely disgusted with the idea of a remake of it, I didn't hate the Richard Linklater.
I didn't.
It's not completely unnecessary, and you don't. It's a and the original Bad News Bears is an absolute classic and one of my favorite movies of all time. But I went in with a really horrible attitude, and I came out not hating it.
No, it's got funny moments, but I've never once had the urge to watch it again. I mean, you know, it's just that the original cannot be replaced.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to watch the Bad News Bears, you watch the original. That's what you do.
And I mean, and still, like, your jaw, I mean, when you watch it today, I mean, you know, your jaw just drops at some of the lines these kids have.
I know, man.
You never get away with today. I mean,
I know. And it was a PG movie. It was PG.
And
you watch Bad News. If you watch Bad News Bears now, it's like, oh, my God. But it's such a great movie, though. So, anyway.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, so let's talk a little bit about some of the on-demand stuff.
All right.
The only one
on the list.
Yeah, All-Stars.
All-Stars. Two kids look to throw an ambitious dance show in order to save their struggling youth center. That's a plot to Breaking 2.
I think it's also the plot to every Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney movie.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But maybe a couple of the Step Up movies too. If I went back and looked at them,
Is there anybody? Is there anybody in this?
No.
Nobody.
Not that I can see.
Nobody that we know. Okay.
Not really.
All right.
Not
so really. Very original premise. All right. There you go. All right. Now, the Bag Man. By the way, Eric saw that one and hated it.
Yeah, he gave it one star.
Yeah, and this is Cusack and De Niro.
One of two Cusack movies this week on demand.
Yeah.
This one, a criminal bides his time at a seedy motel, waiting for his boss after killing several men and making away with a mystery bag.
Right.
So,
and
the bag man.
The bag man, and of course, Crispin Glover's in it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Reunited with John Cusack again after the hot tub time machine.
Oh God, that's right. Yeah.
So. I thought he was the funniest part of Hot Tub Time Machine. Crispin Glover.
He was.
I thought he was absolutely the funniest part of that movie.
And there's a sequel to that coming out too this
good
year.
Good Lord, is Cusack in it?
Good question. Let me look here.
I mean, the stuff he's been doing lately, I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
Yeah, I don't see his name on. I don't see that film in his filmography right now. So
okay.
No,
all right,
it does not look like he is.
All right,
so he still has some judgment. He hasn't completely lost his mind.
Right. So The Bagman is getting like not good reviews from everybody. I was looking in the newspapers as well. Terrible reviews, and Eric hated it. So that's up to you. And A Battle of Empires.
Now, I saw that title listed here, and I looked it up on IMDb, and I found nothing.
Me too.
I mean, nothing even close.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what this is. I couldn't even begin to guess what it is.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is either. No idea.
Yeah.
Is the next one a documentary?
No, it's not. It's a drama, and it's called The Boys of Abu Ghraib, and it's about an American soldier deployed to Abu Ghraib finds himself behind the walls of the infamous hard site, where he develops a secret friendship with an Iraqi detainee. And this stars Sean Astin and Sarah Paxton and John Hurd. So, yeah.
Wow.
Sounds interesting. Sounds interesting.
I like Sarah Paxton.
Yeah.
I like her a lot.
Now, what's not to like?
Now, hey, by the way, did you see Cheap Thrills yet?
No, not yet. I can't wait.
You gotta see it,
I think it opens here on the 28th.
It's
at the Music Box.
It's so great, man. It's so great.
I'm excited to see it.
All right, now the next John Cusack Part 2 here.
Yeah, The Grand Piano.
Yeah.
I don't know. This moments before his comeback performance, a concert pianist played by Elijah Wood, a concert pianist who suffers from stage fright, discovers a note written on his music sheet. That's the main plot synopsis of Grand Piano. And then I scrolled down and I looked at the review, one of the user reviews, and I guess apparently like Elijah Wood just spends a lot of the movie running off stage during the performance because he appears to suffer from a bowel or bladder issue.
What?
So, I don't know.
I saw the trailer for
and
this.
And then he gets back in time for his piano playing.
Yeah.
So
I saw the trailer for this.
Okay.
And there's more going on than that. It essentially, he's got an earpiece in as well because Cusack plays a nut who's got like Elijah Wood's wife or something and is going to kill her, and he's going to kill him if he messes up one note during the whole thing takes place during his recital. So, and Cusack's like up in the catwalk and stuff and being nuts.
Oh, God.
So I looked at it and I was like, oh, somebody enjoys De Palma.
Yeah.
I mean, because I looked, yeah. I watched the trailer, and I'm like, oh, this dude, you've seen a couple of De Palma movies, haven't you? And
a lot of split screen.
Yeah, stuff like that. And I watched, and as you know, my favorite late night guy is Craig Ferguson.
Right.
And Elijah Wood was on Ferguson's show last week to talk about it. And he dropped De Palma's name like 50 times during the thing. I was like, oh, yeah, all right, cool.
Okay.
All right, that's Grand Piano. All right.
Yeah, and also Alex Winter and Dee Wallace are also in that film.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where the hell has Alex Winter been?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, man.
So the last one sounds like it might be fun. I don't know if Eric's seen this or not. It's Journey to the West, Conquering the Demons.
Stephen Chow.
Stephen Chow's latest movie from the guy who did Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah.
A story centered on Tang Sanzang, a Buddhist trying to protect a village from three demons, his emerging feelings for Miss Duan, the demon hunter who helps him repeatedly, and Sang Zhang's transformative encounter with the Monkey King.
I'm in.
I'm in. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you say the name Stephen Chow, man. You know.
Sure.
I'll watch anything that guy does.
Oh, man. And the poster looks like it's a lot of fun. I mean, it just looks like the kind of craziness that he would be up to. And I would check that out. That sounds like fun.
All right. We'll take a quick break. There's one more left on Demand, which opens in theaters in a couple of weeks. And it's Lars von Trier's latest movie, Nymphomaniac, Volume 1. So we'll talk about that. Colin, hang on, okay?
Alrighty.
All right. Colin Suter is here. We're reviewing the movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio overlooking Michigan Avenue here. We're here till midnight. The very lovely Amy Guth and Red Eye Remix will be coming up after 12 o'clock. We are reviewing the movies. Eric, by the way, is in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Film Festival watching movies, so he's not joining us tonight. So Colin and I are covering the movies, and we're about to jump in to the movies that came out in the theater. We got one more on-demand movie to talk about. And Colin...
Yep.
Why don't you tell everybody about Nymphomaniac Volume 1?
All right. Well, as you said, this is from provocateur extraordinaire Lars von Trier. And it opens with a man played by Stellan Skarsgård who finds a woman badly beaten in his neighborhood at night. It's played by Charlotte Gainsbourg. And he takes her in, and she ends up telling her story about how she came to be there. Except that this is Volume 1, so we're going to have to wait until Volume 2 to really get that answer. But she insists that in order for him to understand her predicament, she has to start at the very beginning of her life. So he listens and offers his unique and, you know, mostly non-judgmental take on her situation. And her situation is basically she's a self-diagnosed nymphomaniac. And, you know, she discovered sex at a very young age and has... conducted her life in such a manner where she has as much as 8 suitors a night. Only a few stand out for her as being, you know, really meaningful. One of them is played by Shia LaBeouf, and he comes in and out of her life, you know, throughout the film as, you know, their story goes on. Christian Slater plays her father and is, you know, as you might expect, a bit miscast. Especially when hearing him try to do an English accent. But in an interesting sort of narrative turn, you know, he's one of the few men in her life for whom she has, you know, any real affection. You know, usually in a story like this, it's the dad who's, you know, responsible for, you know, the woman being, you know, a raging sex pot. There's real affection between them, and their final moments in the last half of the film are genuinely quite moving. But her life is a mess, you know, as evidenced by a scene involving Uma Thurman as a jilted mother of 3 boys, in a scene that just might be worth the price of admission. So it's hard to truly judge this film on its own, since, you know, we know that a month from now we're going to see Volume 2, and it's meant to be, you know, viewed as one piece. There's even clips from Volume 2 during the end credits that, you know, promises to take the story into a more, you know, provocative direction. And, you know, von Trier being the trickster that he is, who knows if Volume 1 is going to be the same movie anymore when all is said and done. That being said, this is a surprisingly emotional film that is a bent and twisted kind of love story, but not in a kinky way, but in what it has to say about our notions of love. You know, yes, this woman sleeps with a lot of men, and she feels incapable of feeling true love for them. But there are a few of these guys that sort of complement each other and are like a song to her. Each one of them sort of playing a part of the melody. And that's an overt metaphor that is played out throughout the film rather beautifully. And it works. So this one kind of took me by surprise. I was expecting another, Antichrist sort of thing. And maybe that's what Volume 2 is going to be. It could very well be. But again, this is only the first half of a larger piece, and I might have a completely different take on it after seeing Part 2. But I do recommend it, and it's a perfect film for the on-demand format. So, you don't have to go up to the ticket booth and say, give me one ticket for Nymphomaniac Volume 1. You can watch it in the privacy of your own home and not feel weird about buying a ticket. This is a surprisingly good film.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet. I have issues with Lars von Trier.
Sure, I do too.
Some of his stuff I've really liked in the past. And some of it I've absolutely despised. You mentioned Antichrist. I hate that movie. I absolutely abhor that film. But there's things in the past. I'm a real big fan of Dancer in the Dark.
Sure.
And I think that's a pretty great movie. And I really liked, what's the Melancholia? That I think might be my favorite of his movies. But from the trailer, I was like, oh man, this is going to be tough.
I thought so too, and I thought really the stuff between Gainsbourg and Sarsgaard reminded me of, it felt like a Kieslowski movie. The sort of the relationship that they have kind of reminded me of the relationship in Red.
Wow, that's high praise, man.
I'm not saying it's as good as okay. Red. That movie I hold pretty sacred too.
Yeah,
but it just sort of reminded me, like, okay.
All right. I was going to say, you mentioned the name Kieslowski, man. That's high praise. That guy.
I know.
All right. Well, Nymphomaniac Volume 1, and what's the date on Volume 2? It's April, you said.
Mid-April.
Okay. Yeah. So it's essentially a 4-hour movie. And they split it into
pretty
two.
Much.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, there it is. If you wanted to, it's on demand right now, and you can check it out. And we've got a couple more movies to review, and we can take some phone calls too at 312-981-7200. Colin, hang on. Colin is with us, and we've got a couple more movies to review and to answer your questions if you'd like. 312-981-7200. Quick break. The news is next on WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Oh, yeah, man. Here until midnight. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios overlooking Michigan Avenue here in Pioneer Court. The phone number is 312-981-7200. And if we'd have a movie question or a movie comment, or you'd like to review a movie for us, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. And Colin is here. Eric is not. Eric is at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. He'll be doing some reports during the week on my regular overnight show from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. He'll be dropping by to do a couple of reports, telling us about all the movies that he's seeing in Austin, and he'll be on my regular overnight show from 2 to 5. At some point, we'll squeeze him in for a couple of appearances during the week. But let's get back to this. We got a couple of big ones to talk about. Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
Hey, since we weren't on last week, did you see Nonstop?
I did.
What did you think?
Well, so do you want me to go into the storyline, or should I just...
Yeah, go ahead. We can review this one, right, since we didn't do it last week.
Yeah. Sure. So Liam Neeson plays an air marshal, an alcoholic air marshal. And he's on a plane with Julianne Moore, and he's never met before. And, you know, he ends up sitting next to her, and she's very talkative. But he gets a text message on his phone saying, you know, some bad things are going to happen on this plane if I don't get my money. And he has no idea where it's coming from, but it's coming from someone inside the plane. And he has to figure out who it is. So it's kind of a whodunit or the movie keeps you guessing as to who, you know, might be sending him these text messages. But he keeps getting them, and he keeps suspecting the wrong people, and he keeps kicking the wrong ass throughout the whole film. So, of course, eventually he does find out, and I mean, it's... You're always going to think that you're two steps ahead of this movie. Ah, then it's that person. I guarantee you, whatever crazy, ridiculous ending you had in mind that how this might turn out, I guarantee you the movie's actual ending is twice as ridiculous. That's where the movie completely falls apart. I could almost go with it. For even just as a stupid, mindless action film, and it did keep me guessing. but on the whole, I mean, it's just so. When it got to the end, I was like, man, this is the kind of thing we all feared would happen back in, 2001, or 2002. This is exactly the kind of action movie we really didn't want. We did not want to see happen. And that's all I'm going to say. I know Liam Neeson is, really enjoying the sort of third chapter to his career, second or third chapter as an action star. And God bless him. He's been in some really fun action movies since then. But I really think he and Julianne Moore really need to pay a little more attention to the scripts they're given, because this is just ridiculous. This is the biggest waste of Julianne Moore since Laws of Attraction. Mm. So, I do not recommend this film.
Well, I was with it for about an hour. Seriously, I thought it was terrific fun for about an hour. And then it starts to get, and as you said, I mean, the ending of this movie is completely ridiculous. And I was in a good, I was in a good mindset for it. I went with Mike View. We went to Ricochet's first, and we had some cocktails, and then we walked down to the Davis. And so for a while, we were both like, this is fun, man. I'm digging this. And then we were kind of looking at each other during the last 20 minutes going, what the hell, man? what just happened?
Was it the point in which, Liam Neeson finally confesses to everybody on the plane that he's an alcoholic? I mean, I think that's pretty much where, I jumped ship, for good. This is just embarrassing.
It's just ridiculous, man. But I think I had more fun than you. I don't think I would. I'm not going to recommend it. I wouldn't discourage. Yeah. If you want to watch Liam Neeson, punch people in the face and shoot things, there's a lot of that in this.
So, yeah,
but it's certainly it's certainly no Taken.
And it's not even Taken 2.
No,
as far as guilty pleasures go, I'll take Taken. I'll take the ridiculousness of Taken 2, which is unbelievably absurd.
It is
in every way throughout the entire thing. I would take that over this film.
Yeah, I don't know which one I would take, and that one I think I might take this one over Taken 2.
You're probably like most people. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Why don't you tell us about Mr. Peabody and Sherman?
All right. Well, this is
which, by the way, Eric gave, just so we can get him in there. Eric gave Mr. Peabody and Sherman 2 stars.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
so this is based on the segment from Rocky and Bullwinkle. Mr. Peabody, the dog with the glasses and the bow tie, and his friend Sherman, they go in the Wayback Machine and go to, all these points in history. Except that this movie attempts to fill in a backstory of how these two characters came to be. Mr. Peabody is voiced by Ty Burrell of Modern Family. And he's not just a smart dog with glasses, but he's a world-renowned overachiever. You know, you might say he's the most interesting dog in the world. He adopted Sherman when he's just a baby, and the two have been time-traveling as father and son, all over the world ever since. So when Sherman goes to school and he corrects his teacher on the whole story of George Washington chopping down the cherry tree, he gets picked on by a girl named Penny, and in an attempt to fix the situation, Mr. Peabody invites Penny and her parents over to their house and insists that Sherman not show her the time machine, which, as we all know, is called the Wayback. Long story short, they do get in the Wayback, and Sherman and Penny and Mr. Peabody go to ancient Egypt in the time of King Tut, the French Revolution, the Italian Renaissance, and finally the Trojan War. So I watched Rocky and Bullwinkle as a kid, but I didn't revere it. It's nothing particularly sacred to me personally, I definitely I do understand its place in television history, and you know, certainly there was nothing else like it.
Yeah, I'm one of those freaks about to use the word revere would be an understatement.
Yeah, I'm coming at this from a more neutral place.
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
I think this is a cute film. I think it dumbs itself down a little bit too much with all the butt jokes. I mean, a lot of butt jokes.
Yes.
But I do think there's value in it for kids today. You know, they are being given a few history lessons here, as well as a few science lessons as well. And I think that's when the movie is at its best, when it sticks to the spirit of the TV series, complete with the bad puns and, you know, it's sort of a revisionist view of history. I think when the movie gets sentimental, I think purists like yourself will have a hard time with that. I find the movie a bit uneven at times, but I did laugh enough, and I think the film won me over, and I think it's a cute film and worthwhile for young viewers who have already seen the Lego Movie at least three times.
I gotta say no to this one. And I will say this, though. There were moments in the movie that were absolutely true to the spirit of the TV show. Bullwinkle and Rocky and Bullwinkle was a show that I watched religiously when I was a kid and thought it was just hilarious. And I still watch it. It's on 10 o'clock at night on MeTV, on MeToo. Mm-hmm. And I still watch it. And to me, it's Jay Ward was a genius, and the stuff that he did on that television show was so ahead of its time and so brilliant. And as I'm a 48-year-old man, and I watch Rocky and Bullwinkle and I'll laugh my head off. I will say this: this movie is not nearly as bad as that damn movie with Robert De Niro that they made, whatever the hell it was, 10 years ago. Or no, it was longer than that. It was like 99 or something.
And lest we forget, there was also a Natasha movie
with Dave Thomas, who played Natasha in that.
I want to say Sally Kellerman.
You're right. Sally Kellerman. That's right. Which was also a terrible movie. Of the three, this is the best one. I don't know what kind of review. I don't know what kind of review that is.
Not saying much.
It's just that this is sacred stuff for me. When I found out that they were making this movie, it was one of those deals where I got angry. Not quite as angry as the Point Break remake, but angry.
Right.
And I will say this: the result is not as painful as I thought it was going to be. I think for all the reasons that you're talking about, I wouldn't, dissuade people from seeing it, but make sure if you take your kids to see this movie, make sure they see the source material. Cause if this movie turns kids on to watching, Rocky and Bullwinkle now, I'm all for it, because little kids watching Rocky and Bullwinkle nowadays would make me very happy. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. And But, you know, the sad thing is that, you know, a kid who wants to say, oh, I want to see more, you know, Peabody and Sherman. Yeah, let me watch the Rocky and Bullwinkle stuff. And they're expecting, you know, more, you know, butt jokes.
Right.
Then that's not such a good thing.
Right.
So the movie does, I sort of put this on the same par as, like, you know, Despicable Me 1 and 2, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
But they have their, you know, it has its fun moments, and you know, there are certainly worse films you could take your kids to.
Right.
So kind of a wishy-washy review for me, but I don't, you know, I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah, I didn't think it was horrible. So that on that regard, I'm surprised. So
yeah.
All right, hang on, Colin. We got one more to talk about, and it is a sequel to 300, and we'll talk more about that coming up right here on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here, wrapping things up for a full Saturday show. We'll have full Saturday shows for the next few weeks, in fact, with a lot of our regular guests coming back. We'll have, like, Nell Minow and Jeff Tuckman, so many of our other regular weekend guests. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here till midnight. Amy Guth, the very lovely Amy Guth, will be in for Red Eye Remix coming up at midnight. And Colin joins me to finish up the movie reviews. All right, Colin, tell everybody about 300. What the hell is it? Rise of an Empire.
Rise of an Empire. Yes, based on the Frank Miller graphic novel. And it goes through a lot of exposition in telling how a mortal turned into a god named Xerxes, and how a battle he was involved in ended up killing his father, and now Xerxes wants to lead the Persian forces to invade and conquer Athens. And with him is Artemisia, played by Eva Green, who is just as vengeful and has her own kind of bloodlust. But the hero is Themistocles, played by, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not, played by Sullivan Stapleton. And he's trying to unite all of Greece to rise up and fight the Persians, even though their numbers are consistently, are greater and have, twice as big as ships and have twice as many. So really, this is just a big war movie filled with tons of battles, and you pretty much know how it's all going to go down. There is some sexual tension between Eva Green and Sullivan Stapleton, which makes things a little more interesting, but on the whole, you're going to see this thing for the battles and probably some nudity, and just like the original. And in that regard, you shouldn't be disappointed. You know, I was, not a big fan of the original 300. I just found it really over-stylized to the point of distracting. And, on the whole, I was never on the edge of my seat. And I found the whole thing just rather unremarkable. And the fact that it starred Gerard Butler certainly didn't help things. And so many of the problems I had with the original are repeated here. I hate the slow motion thing. I don't care about CGI blood splatter. I'd rather see the real thing. And, you know, on the whole, this is, you know, pretty much an exercise in masturbatory excess, you know, aimed at suburban basement dwellers who are still waiting for the next Underworld movie to come out. That being said, there are a few things I do like about it. I enjoyed some of the bigger battle elements. You know, I like I said, I don't like the up-close battle elements. I like it when it's on a big canvas. I can watch these ships crashing into each other all day. I think that's fun. And I enjoyed the sexual chemistry, the sexual tension between Eva Green and Sullivan Stapleton. I think that's pretty cool, you know, having, you know, the good guy and the bad guy having some, you know, sexual tension. I wish it could have gone further, but I liked that they at least made an effort to make this more than just good guys versus bad guys. and the presence of Evergreen certainly helps a lot throughout this film. So as much as I don't really care for these movies, I will say they are very sexy endeavors, you know. But do I care about what's going on? No. You know, there's some of the, is it bloated and excessive and just kind of bland after a while? Yeah. I felt like I was watching a big, loud, bloated video game in between a few scenes that were kind of cool and kind of sexy. But on the whole, I can't really recommend it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the first one, but it's one of those movies that doesn't age well. Repeated viewings of 300 have not stood up. You know what I mean? Because the first time I saw it, I thought it was cool as hell. So it kind of lost its luster for me. This is just basically more of the same. And I was not on board with this one. There's some cool stuff in it, some fun battle sequences. The effects, I think, are pretty cool. But if you've seen the first one, you've seen this. It's essentially the same movie, and not very, imaginative, I don't think. So as a fan of the original 300, and like I said, it's a movie that doesn't hold up to repeat viewings very well, I was really disappointed with this one. I was kind of looking forward to this. I thought maybe it would be cool. But, yeah, this whole the whole style of the 300 movies is kind of worn off, I think, its luster. So I didn't dig it, and I'm not recommending it.
It is interesting, though, that it's by the director of a movie called Smart People.
I know.
It's like, how did this guy get this job?
I have no idea.
And he hasn't directed anything else since then. That's a quirky little character comedy, from Fox Searchlight. He goes from that to this.
I was just talking about that with my producer, Dan Shagru, the other morning. I was like, how the hell did that guy get this gig? So anyway, what do we got? Is the Wes Anderson movie coming out next week?
I believe it is.
Okay, good.
And it's already open in New York and L.A., but next week we should be getting that. And we'll also have, I believe, the Veronica Mars movie and Need for Speed.
Oh, boy. All right.
That's going to be fun to talk about.
All right. Well, Eric will be back with us next week. Colin, thank you for pulling double duty.
No problem.
All right. I appreciate it. Colin, thank you very much. Colin Suter reviews all the movies with me every week on WGN. Take a quick break, and Red Eye Remix and Amy Guth are coming up next.